And that is Lord of Glory, You Have Bought Us. And it is ready for this Tuesday, September the 15th in the year of our Lord 2015. And because it's a Tuesday and we're going over the hymn, we have with us our good friend, the Reverend Mark Smith.
Hi. Hey, Tom. How you doing? It's a fine day. I'll tell you, it is just beautiful outside, isn't it?
Oh, it is?
Beautiful fall day.
I hadn't noticed.
Oh, how can you not notice this thing?
Well, because I'm reading when I'm driving and I'm reading when I'm walking. And you know how many people get hit by cars by doing texting while they're walking?
Oh, it's terrible. It's terrible.
Oh.
Yeah. You really have to be careful and
drive
defensively and
watch
out for the other guy.
A couple of things on Google against texting. They had, it was make-believe, but it was a real accident and people were hurt and they had to, the police had to go tell their parents that he had died in the car. And all because she was texting, went into the other lane and hit head on.
Yeah.
Those are pretty good commercials.
Yes.
Yeah. The
one in particular I think you're thinking of is, boy, I'll tell you, that. It's hard to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. It's much like those smoking ones where a person has disfigured faces.
Right.
Because of smoking. So, Lord of Glory, You Have Bought Us. I don't really know anything about the author.
No. Eliza Alderson.
Yeah, you mentioned.
Lived in the 1800s.
Yeah, died 1889, a woman. And, I thought it was done by somebody more knowable, because it's a well-known hymn, isn't it?
Lord, yeah, Lord. Yeah, it's a familiar hymn.
Yeah. You use it?
Oh, all the time. Yeah, a lot.
Yeah.
It's a good motivational.
You're going to use it this Sunday?
Oh, yes. I do always try to use the hymn of the day. And that's partly because we've gone over them. You know, it's kind of drawn my attention to the hymn of the day, and I do always try to use it.
Yes, we spend the whole program on it. Issues, etc., of course, has a professor who goes through all the propers of the day, all the readings of the day, and he also touches on the hymn. And so that's pretty nice. Fickensher, I think his name is, yes. And that usually occurs on Monday, just before I do the Sunday school lesson. Yeah, Todd was out of town, so Ken Sherb was the host.
Oh, Ken Sherb.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, we're real good friends.
Oh, he's a good guy.
Yeah.
I good theologian,
another
too.
Chart up of the humiliation and exaltation of Joseph and Jesus. They're very identical, have about 15 common characteristics. And he added one to it that I hadn't even thought of.
Oh, what was that?
In his exaltation, Joseph, that is, once he became Pharaoh's right-hand man, prepared a place in Goshen for his family to live.
Yes.
And Ken said, oh, and also,
prepare a place
Jesus,
for you.
Prepared a place for us to live. So, boy, there was
that
a
is.
Lot.
Oh, yeah.
I told him if he had helped me, we could have got 10 more. Yeah, you see, in the story of Joseph, in those three chapters, you know, his brothers selling him under Potiphar and then getting to Pharaoh, there's no recognition of any sin he does.
It's no kind of recognition of any sin that Joseph had done.
Right.
Really?
Not that he wasn't a sinner.
Right.
But it's just not recognized. And that's kind of interesting that Jesus, of course, was without sin, really. But it shows how Joseph... the point I was making, Jesus becomes a fulfillment. He's the new Adam. He's the new Moses. He's the new Joseph. He's the new Abraham. He's the new David, etc.
It's all about Christ, isn't it?
It's all about Christ. And when you start looking for it, it's all over the place.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, really a lot of fun. Let's begin with you reading the first stanza of Lord of Glory, please.
Lord of Glory, You have bought us with Your lifeblood as the price, never grudging for the lost ones that tremendous sacrifice. And with that, have freely given blessings countless as the sand to the unthankful and the evil with Your own unsparing hand.
You know, that is a verse no other religion can sing.
Yeah, really.
Because there is no other religion who has a personal God who sacrificed himself.
His lifeblood.
For the people.
Right. That's
Now it's kind of interesting What does it mean that you have bought us with your lifeblood?
Why not with gold or silver, but it was holy, precious blood.
Yes.
And his innocent suffering and death.
And why is blood so important in the Bible?
Well, without the shedding of blood, there is no forgiveness of sins,
yes.
We're told in the scriptures.
Yes, in all the sacrifices, blood was important. Even in the Old Covenant, where the people said, oh, we'll do all the promises of God, blood was sprinkled on the altar and then also thrown over the people.
Right.
When was the first blood sacrifice?
When Adam and Eve had sinned, God had to... He had to kill the animals to provide fur for their, to cover their bodies.
Yeah, this is a trick question, but who is the first person to sin since the creation of the world?
The first person to sin?
Right.
Well, it's that is a trick one.
I know. That's why I asked you.
Well, you're talking about the first human being?
I didn't say. I said the first person.
Now it comes
very
out.
Very good. Very good.
Well, Satan, of course.
Yes. And his
Lucifer.
Crew. Yeah, that sin had already entered into the
And another creation. Another trick question. When was the first sin? The first sin was, the first sin by a human being was when Eve longed for something which God had forbidden her.
We can even argue about that, because while she's having this conversation with Satan, the text says, and she gave the fruit to Adam who was with her, and that Hebrew word means who was beside her.
Yeah.
So he was there the whole time, never said anything.
You think, is that right?
Yes.
I'll tell you, I'll bet you most people don't think of it that way.
No.
Most people think of him as, where's Adam? Well, Adam's off. Had he been there, this would have never happened, right? You're saying that he was there the whole time.
Yes, that's why he got the curse, that he becomes the authority, because that was what he was supposed to have been doing. And so it's interesting which
no
of the
kid,
two
now
had
what,
the first sin.
On what basis are you saying that he was
there?
Well,
look at the Hebrew. It says, who was beside her? It says that right in the text.
It says it right there.
Yeah.
And it's clear from the Hebrew that he was locally right there.
Right.
Okay.
Why? It doesn't say, and then Eve went looking for Adam. Why would he eat of the fruit unless he heard what the devil said?
Well, you're right.
That
you'll
become like God.
Yeah, she gave it to him right away, didn't
she?
Yes.
Yeah, I have.
You know, I'll tell you, I think most people, I know I've always kind of thought, in fact, I thought really Adam's first fault was not being there to look out for his wife, you know. No kidding. I've never thought of him as being right there at that time.
Yeah, it's really.
And I think most people don't.
No, I got that. I can't remember which Hebrew professor was making that point. I can't remember who does the Genesis commentary, but
Professor Groudon?
I can't remember because I had so many of them. But you don't forget things like that, because you don't normally, from the English, it doesn't, you know, sound like.
No.
Yeah.
You know, no.
He was there because he doesn't say anything.
Right.
Boy. So, do you say things to your wife now? Okay, we won't get into any personal life here. Now, never grudging for the lost ones, that tremendous sacrifice. What does it mean, never grudging?
Well, he did it gladly and willingly. You know, I mean,
there's even a Bible verse in Hebrews, for the joy.
Yes, that was set before him.
Yes.
He endured the cross, despising the shame.
A lot of people don't think Jesus was joyous on the way to the cross, because they think joy is an emotion, when in reality it's an attitude. You know, in fact, he was joyous when he was baptized, when the Holy Spirit entered him, which means he for sure was going to the cross.
In fact, doesn't it say somewhere that I have longed to eat this last supper with you disciples?
Right. Well, you can imagine.
He longed to eat it because he knew what followed.
I mentioned that in a Bible study. I said, what if you knew from God that you were going to die on April the 3rd in 2019? Boy, oh boy, would your life change?
Oh, man, yeah. Yeah.
If you knew for sure.
For months and weeks in advance.
And then you could even do a story on that the person stays at home. and a plane crashes into the house. You know, I mean, once God decides the time of your death,
there's
nothing you can do to stop it at all. I'll read stanza two. Grant us hearts, dear Lord, to give you gladly, freely of your own, with the sunshine of your goodness, melt our thankless hearts of stone, till our cold and selfish natures, warmed by you at length, believe that more happy and more blessed 'tis to give than to receive. That's interesting theme of that it's
the
more
gospel.
Happy to give than to receive.
That's right. The gospel warms our hearts.
Yes. You know. In fact, we've got a bunch of birthdays in September. I'm not sure when we're going to celebrate them. I'm almost gone every weekend, but we've got a present that we're getting ready for one of the kids that is going to blow the child's mind. I'm not even going to say if it's male or female, but we're looking forward to seeing the response. In that way, it's a lot of fun to give than to receive.
I always enjoyed shopping for my kids.
You did?
At Christmas time. I always, you know, my wife, I always laugh. My wife would have to say, now, Mark, remember, we're shopping for the kids.
Well.
You live vicariously again, you know?
No. When they were 1 year old, I bought them electric trains and stuff.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Right. Me too.
I set them up and said, look at this go around. And kid was asleep in the crib. But I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, my. Yeah. Do you spend a lot of time buying for your wife?
She's got a birthday coming up, and I told her, I said, tell me what you'd like for birthday.
Yeah. Oh, my.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I do that all the time.
No, I don't do that.
I'm happy to.
No.
Always happy to spend on my
I life. Never know what I gave her to for Christmas until she opens it. Because she buys what she wants.
Oh, I see.
Wraps it, and it's from
I
me.
I see. Uh-huh.
So it really works out good.
Well, at least she gets what she wants,
yes,
right?
Yes, that's right. Because the last time when I gave her the snow shovel for some reason. Oh, boy. So we really aren't those, even in our marriage a lot of times, who will do a sacrifice for somebody unless it's something in it for us. You know, that's the way we are sometimes.
Yeah, we are. We are that way. Strings attached.
Yes. But that's kind of interesting. More happy to give than to receive. That's God's attitude. In fact, he's not happy. Yesterday on the program, you know, we talked about dead and living faith. The dead faith of the demons because they don't believe the promises.
Right.
And the living faith of the Christian who trusts the promises.
Right.
Now, I also then talked about dead and living prayer. In fact, I'm going to start my sermon this week with that.
Dead and living prayer.
Yes.
Now, that's an interesting theme.
Well, it's a very simple concept.
Dead prayer is out of faith. Not praying without faith. You know,
yes,
that's a dead prayer.
It can, but...
Unbelievers.
So my question is going to be, when you pray to God, is it always a proper prayer? And the answer, of course, is going to be no. And the one I think of particularly is Luke 18, the Pharisee.
Ah, yes.
Thank God. He's even thanking God.
Yeah. Yeah.
That I am not like that other person.
Well, see, he wasn't a believer.
Yeah, right. So
he went home that day not justified, as Jesus said.
And we're going to be talking about how you do proper prayer, but we'll talk about that later. I'll do number...
No. I'll read it. You explain it.
Oh, okay.
This is a tough one. This is the one line I really don't get. I'll read it. Three.
All right.
Wondrous honor you have given to our humblest charity... In your own mysterious sentence, you have done it all to me. Can it be, O gracious master, that you deign for alms to sue, saying by your poor and needy, give as I have given to you?
Okay, and I'll read verse 4. We'll just skip 3. Verse... Okay, what's
the
problem with
some of it.
Well, yes.
I understand some of it. You know, wondrous honor you have given to our humblest charity. In other words, you know, our gifts are as filthy rags, really. They're as filthy rags. Apart from Christ, there's little value to them. But he, of course, gives us his righteousness, and God gladly accepts him. But, you know, our humblest charity, I mean, we do a miserable job often in our charity.
But we do a good job. Like, let's say we're giving drink to the thirsty.
Yeah.
And what does he say? You have done it all to me.
Yes. In your own mysterious sentence, you have done it all to me.
Where does that get picked up with? It's a parable.
No. It's the Matthew 25, where he has separates the sheep and the goats.
That parable.
When did we help you?
Exactly.
You know, and he says, "Inasmuch as ye have done it to one of the least of these my brethren, you have done it unto me."
Yes.
But then we get to that difficult. I don't have a clue here. That you deign for alms to sue. You talk about some words that you're going to have to explain to the kids.
Because we got to explain it to the adults.
Yeah, right.
Can it be, O gracious master, that you deign for alms to sue, saying by your poor and needy, give as I have given to you.
Shall we ask people to call in if they have any answers for that one? I don't have a clue. Do you have a clue? Deign, okay, that's like from the word ordain. Deign is like you establish,
make a decision.
Yeah, for alms, I understand what alms are. Alms
are
gifts, works.
Offerings,
gifts.
Yes.
Thank offerings of gifts or works that you have offered. But to sue... What is that?
Yes.
You got a clue on that?
Normally you think of the word sue in a courtroom.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, if you're going to sue somebody. But what does that mean to sue somebody? It means that you're making a decision in regard to what they have done. And to sue, therefore, means that you're looking for what you can get out of it.
Or can it mean this, that you've got, on the basis of something, you can expect something?
And I think that's what God does here, that you deign, you prepare for alms to sue means to give God a benefit, give God credit. Saying by your poor and needy, give as I have given to you. In other words, what God is expecting from us.
He has every reason to expect.
Yeah, because he did it for us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
In fact, you'll hear that every now and then. Well, why should I forgive that person? Because God has forgiven you.
Right.
You know, in other words, you're looking to the works of God, and therefore, he has decided that these alms that you give out, he can look to as that which gives him credit, which gives him glory. And that's how I would understand that. How the word sue is there, there must be a meaning for it used in the 1900s that we're unfamiliar with.
Well, we'll probably hear from some listener.
Yeah,
we'll enlighten us.
Taking phone calls today, but
something.
Tomorrow we might. So,
but that's a tough one.
Yeah,
and I've sung it many times.
Yeah, but I think the context is clear that you're saying by your poor and needy, give as I have given to you. So,
it's like on what basis does God expect us to give these, to help out these poor people?
The same reason he helped you out.
Right.
As a poor person.
Right. I think that's...
Yeah. So I think that's the meaning
right there.
What the specific word sue entails, I'm a little ignorant of also. But be interesting. This is not a translation either. This was an original English.
Right.
It appears. And so... It's kind of like some words have changed meaning since the King James days. But I think it's pretty simple in this sense. You have done it all to me. And then, can it be, O gracious master, that you deign for alms to sue. In other words, that you have proclaimed what you're expecting that alms will do, saying by your poor and needy, give as I have given to you. In other words, it's more blessed to give than to receive, but you do that because you've already been given, not in order for you to receive.
Right.
In other words, you're not doing it for an ulterior motive, like the apple to a teacher. I used that once in a class. I said, why do students give apples to teachers? And most people said to get a better grade. But there was in the class a teacher, and she said, no, sometimes they like the teacher. So I said, well, that could be, yes.
Have you ever noticed it really is easier to give a gift than receive it? Have you ever noticed? Do you feel that way?
Yeah.
I feel that way. I always feel like.
Why?
Well, because you feel awkward.
No.
You feel awkward if you give a gift. For one thing.
No, not when you give a gift.
No, I'm saying when you receive a gift.
Yes.
You feel awkward because for one thing, you want to be sure you show a proper appreciation. You don't want to.
No, there's another reason.
Well, and also because you're thinking, oh, what does this mean? What's attached to this?
No,
you might be thinking that.
No. When you receive something, you feel obligated.
Yes, that's my point.
Yeah.
That's what I was trying to say.
That's different than what you had said,
yeah.
though. But
yeah.
So, if Louise gave me for my birthday a real expensive thing, then all of a sudden I'm obligated. I have to give her something expensive.
A bigger snow shovel.
No, an electric one. Yeah, that's really,
no, really
hard.
Really, think no, about no, that. You, I would much rather give a gift that I know that person's going to love, you know.
Well, it's even when you're complimented, you're standing at the back of the church and the person goes, that was a wonderful sermon. I, for
yes.
a long time, couldn't take that.
Yes.
Because I would
yeah.
always say, no, give the credit to the Holy Spirit,
yeah,
which
yeah.
was a judgment against it. One of my elders said, just stop saying that. Just accept it.
Well, you know what I say?
No.
I've got a good writer.
Oh, that's right. Your wife does do your sermons. Okay. Stanza 4.
Okay.
Lord of glory, you have bought us with your lifeblood as the price. So it's a repeat of the first. Never grudging for the lost one that tremendous sacrifice. So that's identical to verse 1. Now here's where it changes.
Right.
Give us faith to trust you boldly. Hope to stay our souls on you, but, O best of all your graces, with your love, our love, renew. So who is the focus of stanza 4?
Christ.
Yes, he is a focus all the time because you're asking, give us faith. So the faith has to come from him.
Boldly, right.
To trust you boldly. And boy.
Hope to stay our hopes on you. You know, help make us cling to you, dear Savior. You are our only hope.
Right. That's really necessary in today's society.
Right. That is right.
Boy. Yeah.
Cling to Jesus and his promises.
But, O best of all your graces, with your love, our love renew. So once more, it ends on a note that this is not something I'm doing. This is something that God is doing. Apart from his love, my love cannot be renewed. And every sermon, I like to give an analogy that people are familiar with. And for example, this is a very simple one, but you don't like your neighbor. But one day you're driving down your back, your yard or your driveway, and he's waving for you to stop, and mm-hmm. your little child is behind it. Your attitude towards your neighbor changes.
Completely.
Totally.
Yes, absolutely.
And what we need to do is that Jesus did get run over
mm-hmm.
on the cross for you. And so the more you tell the gospel, which are the promises connected to the cross and the resurrection, the more the love of Jesus occurs. Now, you're going to be preaching about that when this week?
Of course, Saturday and Sunday. Saturday at 5 p.m. at Prince of Peace Lutheran Church, just south of the Watson and New Sappington intersection. Prince of Peace Lutheran Church, 8646 New Sappington. We'd love to have you. And then, of course, Sunday morning at 9 a.m., right?
And Bible study?
Bible study right after that. We're studying Romans.
Romans?
Yes, the adult Bible class.
Yeah, that should take about a week or two.
Yeah.
I know.
No, it's a great book.
It's going to take a long time. And I'm on my way right now to Emmanuel Lutheran Olivet to have a Bible study at 11 a.m. We're taking a look at a parable of the prodigal son, which is the wrong name for that parable. That's at 9733 Olive Boulevard.
KFUO. For a contribution to the program, make your check payable to Law and Gospel and mail it to Pastor Tom Baker, Post Office Box 28910, St. Louis, Missouri 63132. You can call toll-free at 1-877-267-1962 or email Law and Gospel at lawandgospel101.com. Views and opinions expressed on Worldwide KFUO may not represent the official position of the management or ownership of KFUO, the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. If you'd like to comment on programs or topics heard on Worldwide KFUO, write us at KFUO, 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can also leave a question or comment on our comment line at 314-996-1542. We are the messenger of good news, Worldwide KFUO.